Does that mean the BND will have a double O department with a license to kill? Or what exactly does that mean?
You're seeing me almost speechless here.
On today's show, we dive into the world of secret agents. Monday saw a public hearing here in Berlin that felt more like a spy thriller than a parliamentary session. Picture this: the heads of Germany's three top intelligence agencies all in one room, warning that Germany is already in the fire, facing hybrid warfare, sabotage and espionage with Russia, the main perpetrator. They're asking for more powers, fewer controls, and hinting at a future where German intelligence might need to go on the offensive. And one even asked, are we reaching the point where active countermeasures are necessary? So today we're giving you a full Berlin briefing on the question, will Germany get their own James Bond? With me in the studio is Florian Flade, a colleague who writes on the topic for public broadcaster WDR and SZ. You've been covering the topic for a long time now, Florian. And on the line is Verena Jackson, a senior researcher and lecturer with the Center for Intelligence and Security Studies, CISS, at the Bundeswehr University in Munich. So it's great to have you both here. And before we dive into details, Germany has three intelligence agencies. Verena, let me start with you. Can you outline what they are and who do they answer to?
Yes, thank you for having me first. That's true. We have three different intelligence agencies here. So the most known is the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, which is responsible for everything that's outside of Germany. So we could call it foreign intelligence services. So whatever, yes, we would like to know about, let's say, terrorists, for example, in the exterior, that's what the BND reaches at. And in the interior, we have the Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, the BFV, with everything that's inside of Germany, all the threats that are inside our borders, for example, extremists. And then we have on the military side, the MAD, Militärische Abschirmdienst, which is responsible for protecting our military whenever it's inside or outside of our borders.
That's great. So now we can work with the abbreviations, hopefully. And if you all get confused, we'll spell them out again down below. And so, Florian, they come to the German parliament once a year for their annual hearing. So this was not a crisis meeting. And you've been observing these meetings for a number of years now. So what happens there?
Yeah, these public hearings, they started in 2017, and it was quite a new development that German intelligence services are going out in the public. So the public sphere, everyone can watch this hearing on live stream of the Bundestag or even visit the Bundestag to see these people answer to the lawmakers, to the members of parliament, asking questions. And it's basically, it's an intelligence oversight committee that we have, PKGR, it's called in German. And it's quite similar to the US version. And normally they are meeting in secret and they are meeting at least once a month and present to the members of parliament the most important topics of the time. And members of parliament are also allowed to ask specific questions or get a specific briefing about a certain topic. And yeah, this is the one chance that these three agencies have to talk to the public, so to say. The only two of the three have an annual report that they are giving out. So the domestic intelligence agency, BFV, they are giving out a report every year about certain forms of extremism, terrorism, espionage, and also the military counterintelligence and counterterrorism agency, MID, they are also giving out a report about, for example, right-wing tendencies within the German military. But BND, our foreign spy service, they don't have an annual report that they give out. So they don't have a...
Yet?
Yet. This is something that some of the members of parliament have called for a long time for, to have like a threat assessment similar to what the CIA or the National Intelligence Oversight in the US is giving out every year. But the BND does not have that yet. So this is one of the rare cases where they can openly talk about their view of the world.
Okay, so we'll get into that. And they all said that their challenges are becoming more complex. That was the core message, right? That the number of crises and wars has doubled since 2010. And of course, that doesn't leave Germany, the world's third largest economy, unaffected. And the number of threats you know, is increasing, but so is the character of the threats. You've got espionage, you've got hybrid warfare, you've got spying activities. And I think we should hear from one of the people who is one of those presidents, Martin Jäger. And he's interesting because, of course, he used to be Germany's ambassador to Ukraine until this year. And let's hear what Martin Jäger had to say.
Russia is masking its intentions, but in reality, it's aiming to test our limits. At best, there's an uneasy peace in Europe, which could turn into heated confrontation at any moment. We must prepare ourselves for further escalations. Russia's actions are designed to undermine NATO, destabilize European democracies, and divide and intimidate our societies. Europe is to be driven, paralyzed by fear and inaction, to self-abandonment.
So Martin Jäger very, very explicitly mentioned Russia, and yet here in Germany there are still a lot of people who question whether Russia really is behind all of these threats, you know, the flying of drones, the attacks on infrastructure, etc. So what stood out for you, Florian?
It was a very stark warning, and it is very straightforward mentioning who is responsible for many of these things that the security services regard as these gray zone activities, gray zone attacks, hybrid warfare, whatever you want to call it. And it shows that intelligence agencies in Germany are now, they see themselves in a role where they have to, step up their game when it comes to counter-espionage, facing this threat and countering it. And it's, I mean, we have this thing called Zeitenwende now. Our former Chancellor Olaf Scholz, shortly after the attack on Ukraine began in February 22, he said this is now a Zeitenwende. It's a new era.
Turning point.
We have to talk about defense more. And this is what you hear from these intelligence services. They say we are also part of this and we have to find our role within this Zeitenwende thing. So what is our role in facing Russia as a threat to European security? And this is the main message that these intelligence services, especially Martin Jäger as the new head of the BND, was presenting on Monday.
And Verena, if I can bring you in, you know, one of the consequences of the Zeitenwende that Florian just mentioned is, of course, that Germany is setting up a brigade in Lithuania at the moment. And, you know, there are soldier families moving there. You know, the German school in Lithuania opened so that soldiers' kids can actually be educated there. And what was interesting, I thought, in the hearing was that Martina Rosenberg, who's the head of MAD, said that there's going to be a position for an MAD agent in Lithuania. Now, why is that?
Well, that is not surprising. When you look at whenever the Bundeswehr is abroad doing missions, helping, there's always the MAD there to protect, well, our soldiers. So this is nothing spectacularly new. What I would like to mention is what you also said, that we are building, well, homes for soldiers there or schools where the families come with. This poses two challenges for Germany, because first, it's a first for us. I mean, you look at the United States, for example, they've been having bases overseas for decades. So they were versed in how to protect their own, well, soldiers and especially, like you said, their families abroad. For us, for Germans, this is new. So we will have to figure out a way how we not just can keep, well, the operation going there with having our soldiers, well, doing their job, but also securing the families. And one single MAD employee won't do the job there. So there needs to be a bigger infrastructure of protection for our families there, because, well, as you said, it's close to Russia. It's, well, on the front lines, quote unquote, so to say. So this is going to be really interesting how Germany handles that. So far, even the construction of housing, of schools is challenging, but securing all that will be shown how we do that.
And how much is it a question of shielding German soldiers' families from threats from outside? And how big is the impact of actually also trying to prevent activities such as honey trapping, where German soldiers who are there, you know, trying to help defend NATO's eastern flank could be contacted by people who are simply out to get their details on the operations that the German army is there for?
That's a good point that you made. It's not just the soldiers as such, it's also, well, not from the outside, also from the inside or from, like you said, honey trapping. I think we will have to prevent, come with preventive measures, with education, with trainings, with explaining to especially our younger soldiers who will go there. That's the majority that will go there, our younger generation. It's not a generation that already lived through, let's say, the Cold War era, where we already had those classical spy tactics that they were well known. So we have to educate them. What's going to happen if you meet someone in a bar or if someone comes up to you asking you very intrusive questions? To sum it up, it's a we learn as we go thing, kind of. We just have to prepare now, but we will certainly learn as we go.
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European Current Affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
Florian, do you agree we have to learn that? Sometimes I think we have to relearn that. I mean, we're here in Berlin, right? Mm. This is famous as a capital of spies, obviously. Yeah. It was at the heart of the Cold War, you know, the city was divided, etc. Can you just give us the context of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of surprising to see. I mean, we were, this was the battleground in the spy war of the Cold War, basically. The spy game that happened in Berlin and also in other cities in Europe, in Brussels, for example, or Vienna. But in Berlin, we had a lot of spies and we still have a lot of activities from intelligence services from around the world. I am also very surprised to see that somehow we have forgotten about some of the experiences of the Cold War. I mean, many of the methods and tactics that Russia and Russia's intelligence services are using today, disinformation, fake news, the propaganda level, but also the classical spy stuff that they do, it's nothing new. It's really, I mean, they are using new ways of doing it. The internet, for example, social media, that did not exist back then. But in general, it's basically the old game. It's the old KGB handbook that they are using. And somehow we as a society, I have that feeling, we have forgotten about this. And also security services, it was not really regarded as a very important thing after the end of the Cold War, and especially after 9/11. I mean, everyone was focused on terrorism, of course, for good reasons. And there were military operations going on in Afghanistan and in West Africa and Mali. The Bundeswehr was in Mali as well. So this was basically what we have to deal with when it comes to national security and priority setting, also for intelligence services. But espionage is still a very important thing. And now we are not only talking about espionage, we're also talking about sabotage. We're talking about the next level. So recruiting people, this new phenomenon of these low-level agents that security services in Europe are talking about, people that get hired for and they just carry out arson attacks for just a little money, and they do surveillance on military targets or potential military targets. And I think the German security services have to step up their game. They have to, and because there's not enough staff, not enough personnel, and it's not easy to go into this spy war, so to say, to fight this spy game, because you have to have a lot of experience, and some of that is gone, I guess, and we have to rebuild it, and we have to step up.
And we've already briefly touched on that the intelligence agencies actually say that they need more money, they need more power. One of the reasons they say is that we can't rely on the US as much anymore. And my colleague Matthew Moore, who's a regular guest on this podcast as well, he spoke to a member of that control committee that Florian mentioned earlier. He spoke to Konstantin von Notz from the Green Party after the public hearing. And let's just hear what Konstantin von Notz said.
Well, it's obviously a very tense moment for the West as we know it. since we have the discussions and debates and problems in the United States. That used to be the backbone of the security understanding of the Western world. And so I think Europe, especially Germany, is in a stronger responsibility.
So, Verena, I would like to throw this to you. What is Fonots talking about there with regard to the US?
Well, there are two aspects in his statement. When one of the, is the bigger picture, when you look at NATO, for example, and how we relied on the US, on the protection of the US and the military, if something happens in Europe, we were already, well, kind of relaxing, like, okay, like the US, they will come in and do the job. It's not like that anymore. It's not sure if, well, if we have Article 5, NATO will be attacked, if the US will bail us out somehow. We are unsure about that. And the more, well, distinct aspect, what you also mentioned, is when it comes to, for example, security, sharing of information amongst intelligence services. So in the past years, decades, we relied very heavily on U.S. intelligence services to provide us with information. You can hear it on the media after almost, well, a lot, I would say not every, but a lot of the incidents that happened in the past years, well, the source was a foreign intelligence services, and well, you can, well, draw your conclusions who it probably was. So that's why right now we have to, yeah, step our own gang up, like Florian said. We are a new world. It's a different world that we're in now. We've been sleeping on that for a long time, didn't want to realize it, whatever the reasons were. There are multiple reasons, but now it's, in Germany we say it's 5 past 12. It's after the time that we should have acted, and it's insecure how the US will help us in the future, and to what extent, for example.
And this was, I think, one of the most interesting parts of the hearing on Monday. The head of the BND, of our Foreign Spy Service, he explicitly said we need to take more risks, because in the world of espionage and intelligence and gathering secrets is the only currency that you have, and you need it to share it with others, but first you have to, you know, you have to obtain this intelligence. And this is why he said we need to take more risks, and we will take more risks. This is also a message to the US and the US government that BND will step up this game, and there needs a lot to be done, because BND lacks some of the capabilities and is not allowed to do they are not allowed to do certain what they call operational measures in other countries. So going out and gathering information on a level that you would expect in a James Bond way to do it, BND is not doing this. They are gathering information, basically analyzing things that are out in the open, sometimes, of course, recruiting people. But for example, BND has stopped what other intelligence agencies in the US, in UK, say is like really the core of what they need to do. Recruiting other spies is something really, really important. So only if you can penetrate the other intelligence service, you know what's going on inside. You can do cyber measures and hacking and whatever, but recruiting another spy will get you an insight into the other intelligence agency. And this is something that the BND has stopped in the early 2000s. And they stopped it because they said terrorism was more important than, you know, going after foreign spies and recruiting them. And the other thing was, it was meant as a friendly message also to Russia back then. So we are not doing this because this is something, it's not very nice, you know, recruiting your people. So it's something very risky. And BND stopped it. And only in the past few years, they restarted this. And this, for other agencies in Europe, this is like the core of what they do, like recruiting other agents. BND is not doing it. And the domestic intelligence service on Monday said, basically, what Sinan Zelen, the new head of the BFV, said, enough of analyzing. We have analyzed the threat. We know what the threat is. Now we have to go after it. And I'm excited to see what this means. I mean, some people say this also means going after foreign spies and making their life, like, you know, a little bit, yeah, not so, yeah, friendly anymore. And to go after them and, you know, stop a threat, stop them from spying.
We'll play a soundbite now where they say we have to be able to confront our opponents actively. Let's just listen into that.
We must confront our opponents wherever necessary. This stance also applies to the Federal Intelligence Service. The service must and will become more operational and more compatible with its European and international counterparts.
Yeah, but before we go into that question, will Germany actually get their own James Bond or James Bond-like capabilities? I just want us all to remember that they weren't only talking about Russia. They were also talking about Iran. They were talking about the risks coming from the Middle East. They were talking about China. And I think China is also something that many people here in Germany are still not sure what the current relationship is. Russia seems to be increasingly clear to most people working in these fields is actively threatening us. And how does China engage in activities in Germany, Florian?
There is a lot of Chinese spy activity. The head of the Domestic Intelligence Service said on Monday that they're using basically every tool in their toolbox in Germany. A few years ago, we were mainly talking about economic espionage, going after German companies' factories, stealing secrets within the industry. Now we are more and more talking about political espionage, going after certain parties, going after certain people that they try to recruit as agents of influence. And influence operations just in general, we have seen that in the UK, we have seen it in Canada, Australia and other places intensively. And now increasingly we are seeing it in Europe and in Germany. And there's a lot of Chinese activities in all of these areas. There's still cyber attacks coming from China. The recruiting of people, we had a very prominent case of a person who was sentenced a few weeks ago. He was an employee of a member of parliament of the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, a member of the European Parliament. And it's a German-Chinese national. And he was sentenced to 4 years and 9 months in Dresden from the higher regional court in Dresden for espionage for China. And the prosecutor said his task was to penetrate this certain party and also to gather internal information from the European Parliament.
And how do, Verena, German authorities categorize China in terms of spying activity, sabotage and political influence seeking?
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, certainly there is a focus now on Russia because, I mean, after 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine, it was obvious to everyone. It couldn't be ignored anymore. If China, it's a bit different. I mean, the security community or security agencies, they see the threat. They also pinpoint politicians and pinpoint to it, but it's not verbalized so openly. There are a few voices that courage to take that risk seriously, but it's not as openly. And if you see at the whole picture also, you cannot really separate those countries entirely. You can say Russia is doing this and China is doing that, or Russia is bad, China is good, or whatever. They also work together. This is also part of the new hybrid threats or the new political and geopolitical landscape we're in, that certain countries who align on certain interests or values work together against other countries, in this case, the West, against Europe or Germany. So I would say always dividing this country, look at this country and analyze that country alone won't help. We will have to see it as a global threat and as an alliance, if you really say it bluntly.
And is Germany running the risk of underestimating yet another threat if the focus is so much on Russia?
To be frank, I would say yes, definitely.
And what's the solution?
I think the solution is, in discussions like this one, to point out the issue, to bring not just Russia back on the landscape, but also China, also other countries who might be right now on the verge deciding which road they are taking, to broaden the landscape. And it's the same if you can have the analogy with drones. Yes, they're dangerous and they're right now above our heads, but they're also fancy and easy to explain. Cyber operations or disinformation is not so easy to explain, not so fancy. And that's the same with Russia and China. Russia now is prominent, and we all know it's a threat. But China is not so easy to explain. And also, if you look at the landscape of experts in that field, for China, there are not that many experts who are in the field, like, for example, on Russia. So that is also a different analysis basis that we have when we cover information.
And if you talk to members of the German intelligence community, they will tell you there are people that know a lot about China and they don't really have an idea about security. They don't really care about security issues or are very naive about security.
But that used to be the case with Russia here. Lots of people traveled there for business.
Same thing. But they also say we have people who focus on security and intelligence, but not that many China experts in that area. So that really doesn't really come together.
And so not enough people to connect the dots.
But there is a certain sensitivity now going on. I mean, there was this long, long discussion and debate in the political field about 5G and if we should allow a company like Huawei to come to Germany and build 5G. So there's a lot of pressure coming also from the United States against Chinese technology being used in Europe. And there is a certain sensitivity, but yeah, as Verena Jackson just said, countries are cooperating. They are both looking in the same direction and also doing intelligence sharing, Russia and China. So this is just a huge task for European security services. It's just a lot going on.
And I'd like to pick up on something that Verena just said about, you know, raising awareness, essentially, and talking about these things and relearning many things that were fairly common to most people during the Cold War. And I thought it was interesting that this meeting, this public hearing on Monday, didn't get a lot of coverage because, of course, it was happening at the same time as the hostages were being freed in Israel and Donald Trump was speaking to the Knesset. Afterwards, hardly, you know, the number of articles on this public hearing was very, very low. And the topic got mentioned in the public hearing. So can we listen to Martin Jäger again, the head of BND?
We must indeed expect that if Hamas is not involved in a transitional administration in Gaza, as agreed upon, at least according to the papers that have been mutually agreed to, if Hamas is driven out of Gaza or forced back underground, then there's a very real risk that it will extend its reach outside Gaza. This would naturally affect the Arab world and certainly also Europe. If you remember, we had a similar phenomenon with the Palestine Liberation Organization in the late 1960s and 1970s. We must not rule this out at all, and that is why we will continue to monitor the situation very closely.
So, of course, something that brings us to the topic of the risk of terrorist attacks also coming from the Islamist scene. And Verena, I would just like to talk to you about those recent arrests in Berlin where three alleged Hamas supporters were caught because they were allegedly planning attacks on Jewish institutions here in this country. Are the intelligence agencies equipped to deal with those sort of networks, you know, a loosely connected organization?
Well, I would say they are more equipped when it comes to, for example, in this case, well, extremists from Islamic background, because they've been dealing with that for last 25 years. What is new is that, like you said, it's loosely. It's not that one, let's say, quote unquote, enemy that they are seeing. It's loosely connections that are well intertwined and somehow overlap. And then they come here and then what we see now in Germany, what was different than maybe 10, 20 years ago, is also the breeding ground on which those, well, extremist views fall here and on the, well, some call it parallel societies or just sometimes it's even just kids being on TikTok trying to find themselves between 12 and 14 years, for example, and seeing the influence from those groups. And I think that is something that the intelligence services have to adapt to that threat. First, like I said, there is a different breeding ground here for those views, and also it's a different spread and different technology now than 10, 20 years ago. And if that's increasing, like Jäger said now in the hearing, if we have to also tackle that threat more, well, we will definitely see new challenges, I would call them positively, for the intelligence services.
It was kind of surprising to see that there was this one elephant in the room in the hearing that nobody talked about. And this is, of course, the relationship to the American intelligence services, to the United States in general. And when it comes to fighting terrorism, counterterrorism, U.S. intelligence services play an important part. Like if you look at the numbers of cases where they have alerted European services and attack was prevented and people were arrested. And especially in that field.
Even here on German ground.
On German ground. Even though we have like 25 years of our own experience fighting terrorism and Islamist terrorism, we see that help from the United States is still very, very important. And these are powerful agencies, the NSA.
And the question is, will it be coming still, right?
Will it be coming? And what happens in the United States is it's worrying to see that not only these political heads, like the heads of these agencies, are fired and new people put in place by the US government, you see that also a lot of experts are leaving this field. People are getting fired and have to leave their jobs. And there was a very, very important person in the NSA focusing on artificial intelligence who had to leave the agency. There was a very well-renowned Russia expert. She was fired from CIA. So it's different than it was in the Trump first time of the Trump presidency. It goes deeper into these agencies, like the changes that happened there. And of course, this will have an effect on the relationship with European services.
Verena, how has that affected your own networks? Because you've got networks with American researchers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say from my side personally, and also from experience with colleagues who work on both sides of the Atlantic, it's been more challenging somehow with bureaucracy or administrative issues, especially now with the shutdown and the government in the US. But personally, I think there is still a good connection and a good exchange of thoughts, of knowledge, of wisdom, let's call it, among scholars. Also between the German military and the US military. So on the, let's say, ground level, the working level, it's still functioning. But as Florian said, we are still at the beginning of a long process, and we don't know how it's going to be in a couple of months, in a couple of years, when all those changes that have been implemented now will actually really, well, have a result.
And we were talking about social media and the risk of young people being recruited by all those, and where the Americans have given us warnings, etc. There is, of course, one big obstacle, you know, if you're coming from the spy view of things, that is privacy laws in Germany. Florian, do you think that people will tackle them? I mean, will the authorities be allowed at some point to snoop on our communications?
I guess they will be allowed in a certain way. And I guess for good reasons. We have very, very strict privacy laws and data protection laws in Europe, but the threat has changed. You see that these threats are cross-border. You cannot really, you know, differentiate between this domestic threat and a foreign threat. We are talking about things, agencies, groups, organizations that act cross-borders. And if you look at how the BND is working in the field of analyzing and spying on Russian military, for example, the BND is also our military foreign intelligence service. So we don't have our own military intelligence service in that way. But the BND is not allowed to share data in a way that you would expect with our military. So if we would be at war with Russia tomorrow, and if you would ask the BND, give us information on targeting, what should we target? Where should we throw a bomb? They are not able to do this. And they are not allowed to share certain data. And this is something that has to change. And it will change, especially the relationship BND and German military will change because of the threat in Russia. But also when it comes to other digital things that intelligence agencies are doing, spying on digital field, there will be certain new rules and options for them. I think so. And there's also this coming from the members of parliament who were very critical a few years ago about this. And it's the Green Party that said we need to put a lot of money into our intelligence services, not only into the military. So quite interesting times.
You mean in the negotiations about all this extra debt that is now going to flow?
Yeah, and it was the Greens that said, don't forget the intelligence agencies, which is kind of surprising because they were very critical of intelligence services back in...
All right, so let's talk numbers, let's talk prospect, let's talk new laws. Verena, what do you expect? What do the agencies want and what will they get?
Well, let's tackle it from a legal perspective. So what Florian just explained, we have a very strict constitutional guardrails or framework for our intelligence services. This has historic background and it's been implemented in the constitution. And our constitution, I mean, it is fairly new, but when you look at it from a digital perspective or the area we are now in, it's quite old. So the constitution doesn't really know how to handle modern threats. So that's why they push brakes on how intelligence services can act. And if you look at a very, very prominent ruling by our constitutional court a couple of years ago, they pushed the brakes even further when the legislative tried to renew the BND law, the BND gazettes. So what we can expect from the future, I hope, like Florian does too, that we will get an adaptation to the reality, that the laws will be there again for the people, for our protection, and not for the sense of itself. But when you look at what the Constitution allows, well, there is still room for improvement or for, let's say, more authority, more competencies for the intelligence services. But the wall is there, and we cannot break that wall because it's the Constitution and our basic fundamental rights.
But to be honest...
Yeah, please.
It's hypocrisy. If you look at how security is established, let's say a terrorist attack is prevented, it is done with measures that are not allowed for our own services to use. But we are taking this information from the United States and from other countries, for example, that are allowed to do that stuff. And this is a situation that has to change. I mean, it's just how will you explain that because of a moral standpoint, you're not doing it, but you benefit from these informations coming from other countries all the time. This is something, it's a very German way of doing things. And I guess that's what I hear from intelligence services in other countries, especially the US. You have to grow up and you have to do these things because it's something that you benefit from in the end. And maybe at one day the United States will not share all of the data or all of the intelligence that they have. Right now they are doing it. They're also sending over information that can prevent terrorist attacks. They're still doing it. There's still cooperation and it's going on. But maybe one day this will not be the case. Maybe they will just shift to different priorities. Maybe the priority will not be preventing terrorist attacks in Europe anymore. Something else.
That's true. Maybe if I just want to add one thing, that's exactly why it worked so long, because the US always bailed us out. And now maybe we're on the verge of not having that anymore. So now we have to look at our own laws and see that we make that work. And well, yeah, it's a bit hard
and
from a legal perspective.
The laws are currently in the parliamentary process, so we're expecting new laws, and of course we'll keep you all updated. But Konstantin von Notz, who we saw earlier in the show from the Greens, made a proposal as well, saying it's not just about more money, more competencies, it's also, for example, about updating people more regularly. Florian, do you see that happening, that instead of having an annual public hearing, the heads of these intelligence agencies, or maybe, you know, their sidekicks, they could come to the German public once a month and update on which threats have been averted, which terrorist attacks have not happened because of those activities?
I hope this will be the case. And again, this is something that these intelligence services will benefit from, because there is an acceptance within society for what they're doing. And this only happens when you talk about the things that you do and talk about the good things that you do. And in reality, of course, you will hear that a terrorist attack was prevented. And of course, some people will say it was because of the information coming from an intelligence service. But what Konstantin von Notz means is talking very straight out to the public about threats that are incoming. And the problem is, the BND, it's answering to the Chancellery only. it is not part of the Ministry of Defense. It's not part of the Foreign Ministry or State Department. It is part of the, it's the Chancellor's spy agency. So whatever they want to do, it's it always within this sphere that this is very, very political. And the chancellors in the past, they have taken this information, but straight out talking about what the BND does and telling about the good and very professional stuff that they do from time to time, that was not a thing traditionally happening in Germany. So I guess there will be, and there are some signs. I heard from people that Friedrich Merz really wants the BND to go out more into the public sphere and talk about threats.
Could that become one of the jobs of the new National Security Council, I wonder? We've done an episode on that. What do you think, Verena?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it would be one of the I would say, easier jobs of the Security Council to raise awareness. And I think Florian mentioned it earlier, we need a mindset shift in Germany. And it's been, well, in the making during the last, well, now 3.5 years. But it still needs more. And like he said, when we have a Security Council with the, well, which has some authority, just even in the name, it has some authority to the broader public. And then we have public hearings or by the service, by the intelligence services, they would definitely increase the acceptance of measures. And then as next step, we could look at the laws and figure out how we can give more, well, competencies to the services without, well, disregarding our constitution. But it's a process and it's long.
And the agencies had, they were given money all the time, if you look back a few years. Even Chancellor Merkel, she was not known as a friend of the spy agencies, but she was able to get them more money, more staff. So it's not really that they don't get any money. Huge problem is hiring the right people, like getting the right staff, the people that you want. And
like you say, equipping them with competencies that so far we're shying away from, like actively going out there and recruiting other people or actively, you know, becoming active rather than just gathering information. And there was this exchange at the public hearing. And I just want us to listen in on it because a member of the Social Democrats asked a question that was quite provocative. Let's just listen to that dialogue.
Does that mean the BND will have a double O department with a license to kill? Or what exactly does that mean?
You're seeing me almost speechless here. For our British colleagues, this film series is actually a very important tool when it comes to recruiting young talent. But in all seriousness, from day one, I've told my colleagues in the service that I'm interested in results, not so much in processes. And we do indeed have to actively take and seek out risks. That doesn't mean we're going to play Bonanza or become James Bond. Don't worry. We will remain firmly grounded in our legal framework.
Aber ich wünsche mir, dass unser Dienst da etwas operativer denkt und etwas wagemutiger wird.
So, Florian, what's that mean? Will Germany get a James Bond-style agent category or not?
I don't think we will be like James Bond in any way. We don't have people running around shooting people. By the way, also the British intelligence services are not doing what James Bond is doing in these movies. So it's still a fictional character. But we will get a different BND, I think. There are certain ideas going around how more operational BND could look like and what it really means. And I guess we will see a more active BND, gathering intelligence around the world in a more active way, with new laws coming in place. They are working on this new law for a long time now, and it's about time to give the service a new law to adapt to the new situation. No, we won't be seeing German James Bonds, but we will see a more active BND. And also, taking risks means there will be things that might not be certain very, very nice things for politicians to accept to
justify to explain
to people why somebody got arrested in a foreign country for recruiting someone. I mean, it happens to these services that go out and do this more active stuff. For example, the French intelligence services, they do this, and it's taking risks means taking risks, and it's also very dangerous. Yeah.
And Verena, your thoughts on that? Where will Germany be on the scale of now to Mossad?
Well, we certainly will never be a Mossad or a CIA or a James Bond agency, because, again, the Constitution prohibits that. We will never have a license to kill, like the question was. But we will. There is still new laws, like Florian said, that are in the pipeline, but there is also still, well, a margin of what the intelligence services does now with existing laws. They can push it to the limit, or they can push it to the edge. So they can still manage and operate within the legal framework. They don't have to go to the illegal side, but they can really do that more openly and more taking more risks, like Jäger said in the interview. But we will certainly always. One person once called the German BND the vegetarian months, the security intelligence services. Well, maybe we will become a pescatarian or something. So we don't really become full-fledged eating everything, but not a vegetarian anymore.
Okay, well, that's bad news for Markus Söder in Bavaria. That's an inside joke. Look him up. He eats a lot of sausages on Instagram. And I'm afraid that is all the time that we've got for today, but I'm sure that we'll get back to this topic, especially after this new law comes out. Thank you very much for watching and listening wherever you found us. Make sure that you leave us your comments and questions. And also subscribe to our Berlin Briefing newsletter that comes out once a week. Thank you very much, Florian and Verena. And I'm looking forward to having you as guests on soon again.
Thank you.